Disc 5.
Chapter 40. Outside Node 3, Chartrukian looked desperate. He was trying to convince Hale that Translator was in trouble. Susan raced by them with only one thought in mind: to find Strathmore. The panicked SysSec grabbed Susan's arm as she passed.
Miss Fletcher, we have a virus, I'm positive. You have to...
Susan shook herself free and glared ferociously. I thought the commander told you to go home.
But the run monitor, it's registering 18...
Commander Strathmore told you to go home.
Fuck Strathmore!
Chartrukian screamed, the words resounding through the dome. A deep voice boomed from above.
Mr. Chartrukian?
The three crypto employees froze. High above them, Strathmore stood at the railing outside his office. For a moment, the only sound inside the dome was the uneven hum of the generators below. Susan tried desperately to catch Strathmore's eye.
Commander, Hale is North Dakota.
But Strathmore was fixated on the young SysSec. He descended the stairs without so much as a blink, keeping his eyes trained on Chartrukian the whole way down. He made his way across the crypto floor and stopped 6 inches in front of the trembling technician.
What did you say?
Sir, Chartrukian choked. Translator's in trouble.
Commander, Susan interjected, if I could... Strathmore waved her off. His eyes never left the SysSec. Phil blurted,
We have an infected file, sir. I'm sure of it.
Strathmore's complexion turned a deep red.
Mr. Chartrukian, we've been through this. There is no file infecting Translator.
Yes, there is, he cried. And if it makes its way to the main data bank...
Where the hell is this infected file? Strathmore bellowed. Show it to me.
Chartrukian hesitated.
I can't.
Of course you can't. It doesn't exist.
Susan said, Commander, I must... Again, Strathmore silenced her with an angry wave. Susan eyed Hale nervously. He seemed smug and detached.
It makes perfect sense, she thought. Hale wouldn't be worried about a virus. He knows what's really going on inside Translator.
Chartrukian was insistent.
The infected file exists, sir. But Gauntlet never picked it up.
If Gauntlet never picked it up, Strathmore fumed, then how the hell do you know it exists?
Chartrukian suddenly sounded more confident.
Mutation strings, sir. I ran a full analysis, and the probe turned up mutation strings.
Susan now understood why the SysSec was so concerned.
Mutation strings, she mused.
She knew mutation strings were programming sequences that corrupted data in extremely complex ways. They were very common in computer viruses, particularly viruses that altered large blocks of data. Of course, Susan also knew from Tancaro's email that the mutation strings Chartrukian had seen were harmless, simply part of Digital Fortress. The SysSec went on.
When I first saw the strings, sir, I thought Gauntlet's filters had failed. But then I ran some tests and found out...
He paused, looking suddenly uneasy.
I found out that somebody manually bypassed Gauntlet.
The statement met with a sudden hush. Strathmore's face turned an even deeper shade of crimson. There was no doubt whom Chartrukian was accusing. Strathmore's terminal was the only one in crypto with clearance to bypass Gauntlet's filters. When Strathmore spoke, his voice was like ice.
Mr. Chartrukian, not that it is any concern of yours, but I bypassed Gauntlet.
He went on, his temper hovering near the boiling point.
As I told you earlier, I'm running a very advanced diagnostic. The mutation strings you see in Translator are part of that diagnostic. They are there because I put them there. Gauntlet refused to let me load the file, so I bypassed its filters.
Strathmore's eyes narrowed sharply at Chartrukian.
Now, will there be anything else before you go?
In a flash, it all clicked for Susan. When Strathmore had downloaded the encrypted Digital Fortress algorithm from the internet and tried to run it through Translator, the mutation strings had tripped Gauntlet's filters. Desperate to know whether Digital Fortress was breakable, Strathmore decided to bypass the filters. Normally, bypassing Gauntlet was unthinkable. In this situation, however, there was no danger in sending Digital Fortress directly into Translator. The commander knew exactly what the file was and where it came from.
"With all due respect, sir," Chartrukian pressed, "I've never heard of a diagnostic that employs mutation..."
"Commander," Susan interjected, not able to wait another moment, "I really need to..." This time, her words were cut short by the sharp ring of Strathmore's cellular phone. The commander snatched up the receiver.
"What is it?"
he barked. Then he fell silent and listened to the caller. Susan forgot about Hale for an instant. She prayed the caller was David.
"Tell me he's okay," she thought. "Tell me he found the ring."
But Strathmore caught her eye and gave her a frown. It was not David. Susan felt her breath grow short. All she wanted to know was that the man she loved was safe. Strathmore, Susan knew, was impatient for other reasons. If David took much longer, the commander would have to send backup, NSA field agents. It was a gamble he had hoped to avoid.
"Commander," Chartrukian urged, "I really think we should check..."
"Hold on,"
Strathmore said, apologizing to his caller. He covered his mouthpiece and leveled a fiery stare at his young syssec.
"Mr. Chartrukian," he growled, "this discussion is over. You are to leave Crypto. Now. That's an order."
Chartrukian stood stunned.
"But sir, mutation
Now!"
Strathmore bellowed. Chartrukian stared a moment, speechless. Then he stormed off toward the syssec lab. Strathmore turned and eyed Hale with a puzzled look. Susan understood the commander's mystification. Hale had been quiet. Too quiet. Hale knew very well there was no such thing as a diagnostic that used mutation strings, much less one that could keep Translator busy 18 hours. And yet, Hale hadn't said a word. He appeared indifferent to the entire commotion. Strathmore was obviously wondering why. Susan had the answer.
"Commander," she said insistently, "if I could just speak..."
"In a minute," he interjected, still eyeing Hale quizzically. "I need to take this call."
With that, Strathmore turned on his heel and headed for his office. Susan opened her mouth, but the words stalled on the tip of her tongue.
"Hale is North Dakota."
She stood rigid, unable to breathe. She felt Hale staring at her. Susan turned. Hale stepped aside and swung his arm graciously toward the Node 3 door.
"After you, Sue."
Chapter 41. In a linen closet on the third floor of the Alfonso 13, a maid lay unconscious on the floor. The man with wire-rimmed glasses was replacing a hotel master key in her pocket. He had not sensed her scream when he struck her, but he had no way of knowing for sure. He had been deaf since he was 12. He reached to the battery pack on his belt with a certain kind of reverence. A gift from a client, the machine had given him new life. He could now receive his contracts anywhere in the world. All communications arrived instantaneously and untraceably. He was eager as he touched the switch. His glasses flickered to life. Once again, his fingers carved into the empty air and began clicking together. As always, he had recorded the names of his victims, a simple matter of searching a wallet or purse. The contacts on his fingers connected, and the letters appeared in the lens of his glasses like ghosts in the air. Subject: Rocio Eva Granada, terminated. Subject: Hans Huber, terminated. Three stories below, David Becker paid his tab and wandered across the lobby, his half-finished drink in hand. He headed toward the hotel's open terrace for some fresh air. "In and out," he mused. Things hadn't panned out quite as he expected. He had a decision to make. Should he just give up and go back to the airport?
A matter of national security. He swore under his breath. So why the hell had they sent a schoolteacher? Becker moved out of sight of the bartender and dumped the remaining drink in a potted jasmine. The vodka had made him lightheaded. Cheapest drunk in history, Susan often called him. After refilling the heavy crystal glass from a water fountain, Becker took a long swallow. He stretched a few times, trying to shake off the light haze that had settled over him. Then he set down his glass and walked across the lobby. As he passed the elevator, the doors slid open. There was a man inside. All Becker saw were thick, wire-rimmed glasses. The man raised a handkerchief to blow his nose. Becker smiled politely and moved on, out into the stifling civilian night. Chapter 42. Inside Node 3, Susan caught herself pacing frantically. She wished she'd exposed Hale when she'd had the chance. Hale sat at his terminal.
Stress is a killer, Sue. Something you want to get off your chest?
Susan forced herself to sit. She had thought Strathmore would be off the phone by now and return to speak to her, but he was nowhere to be seen. Susan tried to keep calm. She gazed at her computer screen. The tracer was still running, for the second time. It was immaterial now. Susan knew whose address it would return. ghale@crypto.nsa.gov. Susan gazed up toward Strathmore's workstation and knew she couldn't wait any longer. It was time to interrupt the commander's phone call. She stood and headed for the door. Hale seemed suddenly uneasy, apparently noticing Susan's odd behavior. He strode quickly across the room and beat her to the door. He folded his arms and blocked her exit.
"Tell me what's going on," he demanded. "There's something going on here today. What is it?"
"Let me out," Susan said as evenly as possible, feeling a sudden twinge of danger.
"Come on," Hale pressed. "Strathmore practically fired Chartrukian for doing his job. What's going on inside Translator? We don't have any diagnostics that run 18 hours. That's bullshit, and you know it. Tell me what's going on."
Susan's eyes narrowed.
"You know damn well what's going on." "Back off, Greg," she demanded. "I need to use the bathroom."
Hale smirked. He waited a long moment and then stepped aside.
"Sorry, Sue. Just flirting."
Susan pushed by him and left Node 3. As she passed the glass wall, she sensed Hale's eyes boring into her from the other side. Reluctantly, she circled toward the bathrooms. She would have to make a detour before visiting the commander. Greg Hale could suspect nothing. Chapter 43. A jaunty 45, Chad Brinkerhoff was well-pressed, well-groomed, and well-informed. His summer-weight suit, like his tan skin, showed not a wrinkle or hint of wear. His hair was thick, sandy blonde, and most importantly, all his own. His eyes were a brilliant blue, subtly enhanced by the miracle of tinted contact lenses. He surveyed the wood-paneled office around him and knew he had risen as far as he would rise in the NSA. He was on the 9th floor, Mahogany Row, Office 9A197, the directorial suite. It was a Saturday night, and Mahogany Row was all but deserted, its executives long gone, off enjoying whatever pastimes influential men enjoyed in their leisure. Although Brinkerhoff had always dreamed of a real post with the agency, he had somehow ended up as a personal aide, the official cul-de-sac of the political rat race. The fact that he worked side by side with the single most powerful man in American intelligence was little consolation. Brinkerhoff had graduated with honors from Andover and Williams, and yet here he was, middle-aged, with no real power, no real stake. He spent his days arranging someone else's calendar. There were definite benefits to being the director's personal aide. Brinkerhoff had a plush office in the directorial suite, full access to all the NSA departments, and a certain level of distinction that came from the company he kept.
He ran errands for the highest echelons of power. Deep down, Brinkerhoff knew he was born to be a PA. Smart enough to take notes, handsome enough to give press conferences, and lazy enough to be content with it. The sticky sweet chime of his mantel clock accented the end of another day of his pathetic existence. Shit, he thought.